How many of you ever saw the film The Matrix? Just put your hand up. Put your hand out. How many people understood it? If you followed the whole series, nobody understood it. But it raised a fascinating question, raised a fascinating issue, especially for me as a high school teacher. See, I think that the issue of The Matrix is a very real one. The film postulated the idea that people had been overwhelmed by machines and in fact they were living inside of pods. But because human beings could never bear to live in that way, a matrix had been set up so that in their minds they thought they were living a certain kind of a life. The matrix was a computer program that allowed people who were in bondage to remain happy in their bondage. They could remain trapped as prisoners and yet think that they were living a life oblivious to the realities that were around them. Raised a fascinating issue for me, because you see, I think that in Western civilization at least, that we find ourselves in a very significant matrix, and that is the matrix of how we view ourselves or how we understand what life is actually about. For about the past 160, 170 years, Western civilization has been brainwashing itself. We have been saying to ourselves that we are nothing more than the end product of a mindless machine-like universe. We are telling ourselves that we are nothing more than atoms and molecules, that we are nothing more than the end product of physics and chemistry. Now, why did this interest me so much as a school teacher? I think because during the 1960s, when I was going through high school, we were being told the story, but it was as if nobody believed it. It was as if we could hear that explanation about who we were. The universe is self-existent. Everything is the product of evolutionary processes. There is no God. You are nothing more than physics and chemistry. And yet, on the inside, we could live a dichotomy. We could live as if there really was meaning. We could live as if there were spiritual values and morals and so on. And perhaps during the 1960s, we kind of tended to be able to live with an idea and yet deny it in the way we did life. When I left university and became a high school teacher, it seemed to me that somewhere during that next decade, there was a transition. And people began to live as if the story was true. We began to take it more seriously. So that the whole concept of life increasingly became to be viewed as if it was nothing more than a brief accident. We were only here for a very short period of time. There was no ultimate judgment. There is no God to whom we're accountable. There is no absolute truth. And so eat, drink, and be merry, for pretty soon we're going to be out of here and you get one chance at life. It's all gone. Live it up while you can. That idea has now been underlined and fortified by evolutionary or materialistic thinking at every level of society. It has become a matrix. It's not only become a matrix which is fortified from primary school through secondary school through university, it is underlined by virtually every media form that exists, so that from National Geographic through to the evening news, the whole idea of evolutionary thinking about life permeates every area of Western civilization to the place where it has become illegitimate to even present an alternative view in a high school, a primary school, and university lecturers have lost their positions over seeking to challenge the matrix, the idea that we have a destiny or a future, that there is a great mind at the back of all things. It has become an illegitimate concept. You are not allowed to teach it. You are not allowed to present it, and you can lose your job in academia if you do. It's become illegitimate to think outside the square. As a high school teacher, what disturbed me most was when you began to speak to young people about living a life with destiny, living life as if what your choices were about really mattered, not just because you could have a better income or a bigger house or a nicer life, but because there were eternal issues involved in being a human being, that we are not simply animals, that we are created in the image of God, that we are held accountable, that there will be a day of judgment, that there is more beyond this life than just the 3 score years and 10. When you sought to discuss things of that nature, the big problem was the matrix. But hold on, the Bible has been demonstrated to be untrue. We're not here because of any creative force, we're here because of evolutionary processes. Nobody could think outside that square. And so it became very important to challenge that. If anyone was going to escape from the matrix and begin to think about themselves as more than just dumb stuff, you had to deal with those questions. And today I want to challenge you to do just that. In escaping from a mindset that says you are nothing more than an animal, or that you are nothing more than dumb stuff, very interesting conversation on John Fain 774 this week, that our entire thought processes, that everything about us is nothing more than a chemical reaction. Love, morals, desires, altruism, all of nothing more than chemical reactions. Is that true? Because, you see, if it is true, it has huge implications for the way we live. And I think that it helps people when you begin to recognize that there is a reason, a very profound reason, to reject the matrix and begin to ask the question, who made this? What does he want from me? What are my obligations being a human being? What does it say to me about my origin and about my destiny? So I'm going to give you some steps that I call seven steps to escape from the matrix. First issue. Step number one, you've got to ask yourself the question, is anything eternal? What is eternal? Eternity is a very puzzling term because what it says is that there is something that never had a beginning. And the moment we try to grapple with that, it's such a big concept, it makes your head hurt. How is it possible that anything could be eternal? Well, you know, when you had these discussions at university, it might go something like this. Who do you believe made the world? I believe God made the world. Or well, then let me ask you this question. If you think God made the world, who made God? Next, the answer to that question, well, nobody made God. God is eternal. He's always been there. And then they would laugh and say, well, ha, that's a religious approach to life. But we don't have a religious approach. We're scientific. Well, really, let me ask you the question. Where did the world come from? Came from the coalition of the solar system. Where did the solar system come from? Came from an expanding universe. Where did the expanding universe come from? Came from the Big Bang. Where did the Big Bang come from? Came from a super hot, super dense ball of mass energy. Where did the super hot, super dense ball of mass energy come from? Well, I guess it must have always been there. It must have never had a beginning. So it is a puzzling thing, but we need to recognize this, that the ultimate cause of us being here is eternal. It never had a beginning. And you can satisfy yourself that something is eternal with one of the simplest equations that I've ever learned in life. And it's simply this one. Nothing plus nothing equals nothing. Now, I learned that in grade 2. Nothing times nothing is nothing. Nothing divided by nothing is nothing. If there had ever been a time when there was absolute nothing, if you could even call it time, if there had ever been a condition in which there was absolutely nothing, what would be present right now? Absolutely nothing. Now, that drives me to the fact of asking the question, is there something here? I'm quite satisfied that I'm here. I'm satisfied the world exists. The solar system is here. The universe is actually present. There's something here. And that means something has always existed. I don't know how it's possible for something to have never had a beginning, but it's clearly true. Now, just when I thought I'd got that far, I discovered Philosophy 101. They do this at university to help young people who have left high school to discover that there's nothing that they can be certain about. So in Philosophy 101, you're encouraged to challenge that thought that you are even here. Now, I had thought that I was here, and I'd hoped it was true. In fact, I've been reasonably certain of it. But I finally discovered there's a university course that helps you to realize you can't even be sure of that. So I went down to the university to have a talk to the professor about that. And when I did, I was parking my Volkswagen and I scratched it along the side of his BMW. And for a very brief moment, I discovered that there were some things that he was quite certain about. What he was quite certain about was that was his BMW and that I just scratched it. And my response to that was, well, sir, the reality is we can't be certain about anything. In fact, I've heard in your course that I can't even be sure that I exist, because I may be nothing more than the figment of somebody else's imagination. And I'm just would like to present to you the thought that perhaps this car park does not even exist, that this moment is nothing more than a bad dream. And you will discover that for one brief moment, the lecturers that they pay to teach that to university students suspend their courses when it comes to their cars and scratches along the side. He's very certain of one thing. It's my car, you scratched it, pay up. See, that's a game that they may play at university, but nobody seeks to live their life on that basis, because it is totally unworkable, it is unrealistic. But we are faced with this reality. If there is something here now, then there has always been something. Something is eternal. Something has never had a beginning. There is something that has life in itself, that is self-existent. It doesn't have to have an explanation. Well, how could it be? Only things that have a beginning have to have a necessary cause. Things that have never had a beginning simply are, and I'm satisfied that something is eternal. My next question is, what might that be? That's step number one. Something is eternal, even if that's a very extraordinary thought. Second step is this: what is eternal? There are two possibilities. What is it that never had a beginning? Largely speaking, there are two possibilities. Firstly, that mind or personality is eternal. Now, you can give it a name and you say, God. God. Well, the point is that there is the possibility that mind or being or personality is everlasting. It has never had a beginning. The alternative proposition, which is pretty much taught in every school and university, is that matter itself is eternal. Dumb stuff, mass energy, is eternal. And I think it's important to say, all right, let's put those two on the table. But don't suggest to any student at any level that it is more scientific to imagine that matter might be eternal, but it would be ridiculous to imagine that personality could not be eternal. If matter can exist without a beginning, then so can a person exist without a beginning. And this is where the issue begins to clarify a little bit. Because you see, those who teach evolution and those who teach a materialistic view of life. When I say materialistic view, I don't mean you want a bigger house or a bigger car. I mean, you view everything as if it's nothing but dumb stuff, just nothing but atoms and molecules. The materialists originally thought that the universe might be eternal, that maybe that's why we're all here, because the universe is eternal. The problem is we now know that is not true. Sir Arthur Eddington put it this way. He says, philosophically, the notion of a beginning is repugnant to me. I should like to find a genuine loophole. We must allow evolution an infinite time to get started. I'd love to have the thought that the universe could be demonstrated. It's eternal. Now we can explain everything. There is no God, and you and I are the end product of physics and chemistry. However, we now know that that is not true. For example, Anthony Kenny, an atheist writing in National Geographic in 1999, summed up the current position on this issue of the universe. According to the Big Bang theory, the whole matter of the universe began to exist at a particular time in the remote past. A proponent of such a theory, at least if he is an atheist, must believe that the matter of the universe came from nothing and by nothing. Because, you see, the universe did have a beginning. It is not eternal. We're now clear about that. That's a problem to me because, again, I know it was only grade two, but nothing plus nothing equals nothing. Nothing gives rise to nothing. Nothing ever could come from nothing, and yet that is really the foundation of what is being taught in every university and school across this nation, and it's become like blinders on people's eyes. Just blinders. I can't see beyond dumb stuff. I can't imagine that that's not the truth. Well, it is a deception. Now, step number three is this. Just imagine that mind and matter are still two possibilities. We're going to leave them both on the table. That matter itself might be the solution to why we're here, or personality may be the solution to why we're here. Here's the thing. We now know this, that you can recognize the difference between what mind can do and what dumb stuff can do. You can tell the difference between what a mind is capable of. See, a mind has a plan. A mind, well, as a teacher, I discovered that wasn't always true. In fact, one of the greatest, they talk about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I was just trying to find it in my classroom. And the reality is that when it comes to the issue of mind, mind is capable of conceiving something before it even exists and then manipulating matter in order to bring it to pass in a way that natural forces can never do. Mind has the ability to overrule the way matter behaves left to itself. So that when you find a building like this, nobody is confused that this is the end product of physics and chemistry. It is the end product of thought processes, of plans, and of deliberate skill applied to the material world. Now, matter itself can do all kinds of things. Matter can produce all kinds of stunning results. I have stood and actually walked into the Grand Canyon, and anyone that has ever walked in there knows that it was not scooped out by the finger of God. It's the product of hydrology. It's the product of geology, and hydrology is not a problem with appreciating that matter can do things. But what mind can do and what matter can do are profoundly distinctive. And I guess we can thank an evolutionist in the form of Carl Sagan for helping to sharpen the issue of what mind and matter can do. Now, Carl Sagan didn't believe in God. Well, he's dead now and he knows better. So Carl Sagan was one of the most vociferous evolutionists of the past 20 or 30 years. He encouraged the United States government to invest billions of dollars of taxpayers' money in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Now, the distances in space are so profound, you can't go search out intelligence by actually going there. We've never got beyond the moon. It may be that it would be virtually impossible for us to get beyond our own solar system simply by virtue of the distances that are involved. So if we're going to search for extraterrestrial intelligence, how would we do that? Well, Carl Sagan gave us a test. And this was the proposition that he had. The universe constantly beams out electromagnetic radiation. Pick it up on radio. You can pick it up on radio telescopes. And it's constantly creating radio waves of various kinds. However, and by the way, maybe I can give you a just a little feel for how that sounds. This is the kind of sound that the universe makes. And you can pick this up over a radio telescope. This is what you hear when you turn the radio telescopes out to the universe. Now, you hear that resonance? That's what you get when you tune radio telescopes out there. Beeps and every spectrum all happening at once. You know, years ago, it's an interesting thought while I'm here. Let me tell you this. Years ago, in order to create the kind of music that they felt went with our materialistic backgrounds, back in the 1930s, there were people who made music that was supposed to demonstrate our random background. So they created music that had no plan to it. Anybody own one of those records? They were not big sellers. I've never found anyone who actually owned one. Because we were the children of chaos, they said. We should have music that matches our background. The funny thing was that nobody ever really wanted to buy one. But then, our day has come, and we'll have everything. That sold millions. But the difference was, it required thought and the selection of notes in order to create something that resonates with the human heart. Because you see, Carl Sagan said this, you turn your radio telescopes out to the universe and all the universe is capable of doing is making noise. It is incapable of creating information. Information requires intelligence. Anybody that's ever conducted a test in a schoolroom knows you ask a question and then you're looking for a response because it requires a mind to understand the question and then select letters out of the alphabet in a sequence that demonstrates intelligence. It requires a mind to do that. Carl Sagan said this, out there in the universe we have all kinds of things that are beaming out, but if there was intelligence, we could know because we can connect our computers to all of that information coming back from the radio telescopes. And if we were to get information, if a message was to come, this is the central idea in a film called Contact by Jodie Foster. If you were to get information back through the radio telescope, you've proved that out there in the universe, there is intelligence. Can't get information without intelligence. Well, you didn't need to spend billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to be searching for intelligence. All you really had to do was fire up an electron microscope, cost you about $2, and just take a look at the DNA molecule. Francis Collins, who is the director of the United States National Human Genome Research Institute, he's the man who has led the 2,400 scientists that have been unpacking the human genome, wrote a book about the DNA molecule, and he called the book The Language of God. Because he said, here we have the most densely packed and elaborately detailed assembly of information in the known universe right here in every cell of your body. And Carl Sagan has helped us to appreciate this. Dumb stuff is incapable of creating information. It requires intelligence to create information. And every cell of your body contains information of the most profound and extraordinary detail. The most densely packed and elaborately detailed assembly of information in the known universe. Now, that ought to inspire us to recognize that there is an implication with the existence of information. And I think the Bible sums it up so brilliantly. And the Bible does this. It tends to sum up huge issues in very few words. Listen to what the Bible has to say about why you and I are here, about why living things can even exist, about why such extraordinary complexity is possible right here in our own hometown. Because information is the product of the greatest mind you could ever imagine. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Through Him all things were made, and without Him nothing was made that has been made. The Bible said it. If you don't have Word, if you don't have information, you can't create anything, because it demands, creation demands the existence of profound information. On the other hand, this is what we teach our kids in school and in university. In the beginning was the particle, and the particle was with God, and the particle was God. All things were made by the particle, and without the particles, there was not anything made that is made. The dumb stuff is sufficient to explain everything that we see, and the fact of the matter is it is absolute nonsense. And the sad thing is that everybody can know. It's not like this is a great puzzle. It's like a matrix. It is like the greatest deception pulled over millions of people every day, waking and thinking they're nothing more than dumb stuff. And yet in their own bodies, the information of their own DNA cries out for the greatest mind that you could ever imagine. Now, in the movie The Matrix, I love the fact that they came up with this thought, don't ignore the splinter in your mind. Now, in the movie, there were glitches in the program, and you could see them happening and think, hang on, that doesn't fit. That doesn't fit my view of the world. Well, the Bible says you are surrounded by splinters. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and His divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that we are without excuse. Every moment of every day, we are confronted by stuff that's awesome. It's just overwhelming. It just knocks your socks off when your eyes begin to be open to it. We are surrounded by the fingerprints of God everywhere we look. And even a man like Charles Darwin experienced the splinter in the mind. Now, Charles was the philosopher more than a scientist who popularized the idea of evolutionary thinking. But Charles Darwin lived with a splinter in his mind just like everybody else does. And you know what the splinter was, at least one of them for Charles Darwin, is this. It was the peacock's tail. You see, the average kid, when a kid looks at a peacock's tail, just says, wow, you know, that's extraordinary. Charles Darwin wrote in a letter to one of his friends, the sight of a feather in a peacock's tail
whenever I gaze at it, makes me sick. Really, Charles? Well, let me ask you that question. What is about a feather which, when you gaze at it, makes you sick? Well, when you've spent your entire time trying to explain to everybody that you can explain all things, everything in life, in terms of mindless matter, small accretions, small accumulations of little mutations which have no other benefit than survival. And if you add them all together, that's what we have today. It accounts for everything. Well, it looks like an artist did that, mate. That looks like a work of art. No, it appears that way, but it's nothing more than the end product of the survival of the fittest and micro mutations, really. Well, let me ask you this. Why don't all the other birds have one of these? You think that this is necessary for survival? Well, how do all the other birds survive without a target of that size nailed on their backside? In fact, I'd have to say this to you. I'd have to say that's a real challenge to survival. They go and nail one of those on your behind and try and you survive. That takes some skill. This is not the accumulation of mindless mutations. This is the product of an artist. And every time he looked at it, there was a splinter in his mind. Even as he was developing the theory of evolution and writing his explanation for the origin of species, nothing more than mindless matter at work. He'd look at that and the splinter in his mind would cry out and protest and he'd feel sick. Splinter in the mind. You find it everywhere you go. Because you see, the Bible is true when it says, everywhere in creation, God has revealed his power, his capacities, which are mind-blowing. See, I think one of the problems is that we've become so sophisticated, we're stupid. You know, I'll show you a picture. This is a photograph I took at a birthday party, just accidentally. It's one of those priceless photographs that you take at a birthday party and you're just glad you grabbed it. My grandson, Sam, had just been given a present he hadn't expected to receive, and this was his reaction. See, I would call that the wow factor. He was stunned, and he didn't mind acknowledging it. You know, I think it's one of the reasons Jesus said this. He said, unless you change and become like little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven because you're so smart. You're so smart, you've become blind. You can't even see what's right in front of your own face. Is there nothing in life to be amazed at? Is there nothing in life to just stun you and say, oh, how magnificent? What is it about us that helps us as we sit and hear a brilliant 100-piece orchestra play the Moonlight Sonata and there's tears running down your face? What is that about? Well, it's the wow factor. This is marvelous. This is the product of brilliance. It's not just accidental matter that has somehow resulted in the survival of the fittest. Is there no wonder, no stunning sense of amazement? Who did this? Who invented this kind of stuff? And if someone did that, what does he want from me? Why is it so wonderful? Why is it that I'm surrounded by so many examples of brilliance, unnecessary brilliance? See, we're not talking here about an argument between creation and evolution. We're talking here about an argument between evolution and love. Because what we are surrounded by is evidence of love, delight, the kind of things that fathers do for their kids. They just love making situations where kids know how valued they are and how loved they are. And the reality is that you and I need to go for the red pill. You know, we really do. We need to ask ourselves the question, who did this? This is not the end product of dumb stuff. Who did it? The fact is this, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities have been clearly seen. So we are without excuse. See, I think one of the greatest steps that you can ever take in life is to be amazed all over again. Step number 7, just be amazed. Be amazed. What is man that you are mindful of him? This, you won't even be able to see it up there. We've got to get better projectors or darker auditorium. This is a brilliant slide. It was taken in 1990 from Voyager 1. On its way out of the solar system, they instructed that spacecraft to turn around and begin to take photographs of everything it was leaving behind in the solar system. It turned around, and from 4 billion miles, it took a photograph of planet Earth. Let's see if this one's any better. That's us from 4 billion miles away. And all we're doing is leaving our solar system. It's at least 4 light years to the nearest star outside of ours. And there in this, in the awesomeness of space, within dimensions that it's not even possible for the human mind to grasp, that little silver sphere is us. Everything that has ever happened on planet Earth, all of history is wrapped up on that little dot. Why? Because you're supposed to be amazed. God hides himself. Life is a probationary experience. You are not an animal. You are being given an opportunity, a probationary opportunity to become a child of God. You are being given an opportunity to escape from the matrix, the lie that says you're nothing but dumb stuff, you're nothing but an animal, and begin to seek the creator of the heavens and the earth. In fact, the Bible tells us that that's the whole meaning of life, that we might know him and be known. Are you prepared to seek him? Is life sufficiently extraordinary for you to begin to ask questions? God hides himself that you might seek him. Not that he can't be found, but that only those who desire to find him will find. He will not force himself. If God was to reveal to himself who you are, you would be overwhelmed. You would have no capacity to make a choice. And God is giving you the choice as to whether you want to be a child of God, whether you desire to live, whether you desire to experience all that heaven has, or whether you have no desire. We are so fragile. I mean, when you look at that little sphere from 4 billion miles away, you ask, the first thing that comes into my mind is this: what is man that you are mindful of him? We are so fragile. The events of the last few weeks have underlined to us in Christchurch and in Tokyo how fragile we are. We are brilliant. We created Voyager 1 and we were able to take a photograph of ourselves from 4 billion miles away and retrieve it electronically. We bear in our own brilliance the capacities of God's own divine nature. Yet we have separated ourselves from him. And we live on a world which has determined to simply run itself. And every now and then we bump into the fact that we are incapable of ourselves, of managing our own planet. We must cry out. We need to seek the Father of life. We need to recognize that he is able. We need to be amazed all over again. Let me finish by saying this to you. All I've sought to do today is to underline how relatively simple it is to figure out from what we know whether or not there is an eternal God or it's eternal dumb stuff. But the absolute proof of the love of God is Jesus Christ, the absolute proof. The Bible says that God so loved the world, he gave his own son. Have you ever stopped long enough to allow Jesus Christ to amaze you? Because you see, I think this morning before you leave this place, he could demonstrate his love to you and encounter you right here in this building. The greatest proof the world will ever receive until Christ returns again is his life and his majesty. And for one moment, would you let this song and this brief clip allow you to be amazed that on this little dot, God has focused his love and his attention. You have a life. You have a future. You have a destiny. Will you seek it? Or will you believe the matrix and live and die like an animal? You have a choice to make in Jesus' name.